The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing. Where this week, as every week, we're just working our poor little fingers to the bone to make sure you get the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today we're going to talk about a topic that, like, everyone's heard about, but 90% of the people I know don't fully understand, and that is land trusts. But before we jump into the whole trust topic, a couple of upcoming events y'all need to know about. Number one, tonight at 7:30 Eastern Time is the free Summit Investors Help Night. This is a service of the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. Started out being for folks who had attended the National Summit and who requested that we be able to get together more than once a year. Turned out to be really anybody can come, and there's not like a lecturer. It's like every month there's a different topic, and you just call in or actually Zoom in to get or give help. Tonight's topic is deal structuring help. So if you have a deal you're having trouble negotiating, or you know, something that maybe happened before that you thought you could have done better, and maybe you'd like to talk through how that might have worked, just, you know, join in tonight or just listen to other people's questions. Those are always interesting. So that is at 7:30 Eastern. You can get your free link at CincinnatiREIA.com. That's Cincinnati, REIA.com. While you're there, check out the calendar this Saturday. There is a more or less all day, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Class for those of you who make private loans or have been thinking about making private loans, or maybe you want to get private loans and you just don't understand how private lenders look at your private loans and you're trying to make yourself like the best possible borrower. It is with Chris McCarty, who was last week's guest. He's going to talk about how to underwrite private loans right. You can also get information about that at CincinnatiREIA.com, although you should check your own group's website for that as well, because for the 12 groups throughout the country who are participating, it is $47 for people who are not a member of one of those groups. It is $97, 100% money-back guarantee as well. So to help us today to understand more about the way more interesting than y'all think it is, way more useful than y'all think it all is, topic of trust, we've got Mr. Todd Van Meter, who is an extremely decades-long experienced real estate investor. And he's going to start off by telling us, Todd, tell us about your real estate career and tell us how it led to your expertise in trusts.
Well, the expertise in trust came from practical reasons, just learning from Dykes Botterford and some of the other legendary speakers out there talking about strategies that can help investors. But I've been full-time in real estate for 40 years now. I got interested in real estate in my teenage years, and by the time I turned 20, I was full-time in real estate, and I've been in it ever since and have loved every year of it. It's been a great opportunity, and it's always changing and evolving, so you keep learning and leaning new strategies. So even after 40 years, I'm still learning new techniques and new ways of doing things because our world keeps changing. So that's me in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Now, when people hear the word trust, a lot of times, I think the first thing that maybe turns their brain off and makes them think, I don't want to know about that, is when they think about trusts, they're thinking about the year and a half their parents spent with an attorney creating, and tens of thousands of dollars, creating a trust so that they could then put all of their stuff into it, you know, house, car, bank accounts, stock accounts, everything into it. And they think, well, I don't have the time or the money to deal with that. And I don't understand, like, how my life as a real estate investor who owns two properties requires that kind of planning. What is that kind of trust versus the more common kind of title holding trust that we talk about in real estate?
Well, the kind you mentioned and you hear about, like, you know, all the families have, the Kennedys and people like that, the famous families in the United States, those are pretty much legacy-type trusts, and they're pretty much all irrevocable trusts. And they do, or they are a little bit more complex. They take a little more set up. But if you have net worth that's up in the, you know, in the millions of dollars, then it's worth that time and it's worth that investment typically to set up a trust that can protect your assets even more.
Mm-hmm. So you said the word irrevocable.
Yes. There's two types of trusts out there. The world of trust can be divided into two halves. The first half, which is most beneficial to investors in their early years, is a revocable trust. And the second half of that equation is an irrevocable trust. They are both trusts, but revocable trusts, the kind that more investors and even just somebody that has a personal home and that's their only asset, could potentially benefit from having a revocable trust. And the difference between the two is, with a revocable trust, you could put your personal home into the trust, and then 5 years later, if you want to refinance it or pull it out to sell it, you could do that. With an irrevocable trust, if you put your personal house into it, you could never pull it out to refinance it or to sell it. It would be in that irrevocable trust forever, mm-hmm. or until the trust itself was dissolved.
Now, to be clear, if my house is in an irrevocable trust, I can still sell the house. It's just that
the trust could sell the house.
The trust is going to sell it, and the money is then, in theory, going to go back into the trust.
To that irrevocable trust bank account.
Okay.
Because irrevocable trusts must have their own bank account. Typically, revocable trusts, in most cases, do not have a bank account. Mm-hmm. They are a pass-through entity. So all the incomes and expenses from a revocable trust typically goes to, say, my bank account, my personal bank account.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So everybody who was like, no, I'm going to tune out on this because I don't want to spend $20,000 and spend a year with an attorney and put all of my stuff into this thing that I can't get it back out of without dissolving the whole thing that I just paid all that money and spent all that time on. That is really not what we're talking about today. We're going to talk about the title holding type trust that when you hear a real estate investor say, oh, I have that property in a trust, that is most likely what they mean. They're also extremely valuable. They don't cost anything like as much money or take anything like as much time. We're going to be taking a break during which you can feel free to either call in your questions at 877-772-9658. Remember, you know more about what you want to know about trust than I do. 877-772-9658, or you can send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones-Cox. My guest today is Todd Van Meter, who, he's not an attorney. He's just a guy who spent a bunch of time studying up on trusts because some very smart people told him to, and has been using them for longer than most of us have been in real estate altogether. Questions on trusts, 877-772-9658, or send an email to vinaradio@gmail.com. So, Todd, I think the most common wrong thing that people say about these irrevocable title holding trusts, commonly known as land trusts, is they are entities. I got my LLC, I got my corporation, and I got my land trust. What are they actually?
They are actually a revocable, in the case of a land trust on the revocable side, they're a revocable legal arrangement that is, another word for that is a contract. They are basically a contract between the person who sets it up, the trustee who runs it, and the beneficiary who gets the beneficial interest in the trust.
Mm-hmm. And very often, the person who sets it up is either the beneficiary or somebody very closely related to the beneficiary, such as...
That's exactly right.
such as I might set up a land trust and therefore be the grantor of the land trust. The beneficiary is most likely my LLC in my world, and then the trustee is the person who I better trust. There's a reason that we call them that. The trustee is the person that I trust who is actually going to hold title to the property we're talking about. Is that correct?
That's correct, and that is the way most people set them up, with an LLC as the beneficiary, because that does give them some extra asset protection by having an LLC as the beneficiary. A lot of people also set them up with possibly their spouse as the beneficiary or their children as the beneficiary to keep the money in the family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I have heard, sometimes from a stage somewhere, that land trusts are just another form of asset protection. And in my brain, asset protection means an entity that has under law its own set of things that protect you, right? So like in a limited liability company, if it is set up correctly and run correctly, your liability in case of, let's say, a lawsuit that resulted in a judgment that was bigger than the limits on your insurance, which is really your first level of asset protection, what the person who won the judgment can get is what's in that LLC. That is not how a land trust works, correct?
Correct. That's exactly right.
Okay, so what is the
land
purpose?
Land trust can be pierced. The purpose is it does provide some privacy. By taking your name off the title, for example, even in your personal house, that's the way most people could use a land trust. The most people in this country could use a land trust simply by putting their personal home, even if that's all the real estate they own is just their one property. They could benefit by this because a lot of people have jobs or interact with people throughout their day, throughout their week. And some of those people might have a disagreement with them. You might work in a restaurant. A customer gets irate at you, and then they want to come and find out where you live. Well, the privacy allows you to take your name off the title, and now because of that privacy, they might not be able to figure out where you live. That was extremely important to me. That was one of the first reasons, to be honest with you, I started using land trust, because as a rental manager and dealing with hundreds of various tenants, 99% of them, which were fantastic people, there's always still one bad apple in the bucket somewhere. So I have a wife and two little children at the time, back in the early 90s when I first started investing. And I didn't want anybody unannounced showing up at my house, especially if they were disgruntled because I'd filed an eviction against them or something like that because they hadn't paid the rent. So that's one of the biggest benefits, is the privacy of it.
Can I tell you the day that I moved my personal residence into a land trust? Because I had my rentals in land trust before that, but I was like, my personal residence, you know, what's the big deal? It was the day that at 11:30 at night, when I was at home alone, there was a pounding at the door, and when I looked through the window in the door, it was one of my residents who I knew had been served with an eviction notice that morning, and he was clearly under the influence of some substance or another when he got there. And he was shouting at me through the door about how I wasn't going to do this to him and he was going to pay the rent and how dare I put that notice on his door. And I was terrified. And I thought,
right,
with a name as uncommon as mine, it's pretty, you know, easy to find me simply by looking in the public records. And I was very grateful that I had done that. On the day that Michael remember this, I received a letter from prison because at that time I was on a station that had a repeater station near a major prison in Michigan. And I was told in no uncertain terms that when this fellow got out of jail, he was going to find me and I was going to teach him real estate. And I still have the letter, Mike, if you want to see it.
Wow. When I gave that example, I had no idea you'd actually had that experience. It turns out it was a very good example to use.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you've had that experience.
Yes. Well, my parents actually sold their last house to a quarterback for a major local football franchise. And I was very surprised to find that he took that property in his own name. And apparently within a couple of weeks, he was getting frequent visitors who had comments on how he had played the game last Sunday. So,
perfect example of why to use a land trust even for your personal residence. We got Vina's story, and we have a quarterback's experience. But,
That's right.
And typically, higher net worth people, they have the attorneys who recommend this stuff to them. The rest of us, when I started out, I sure didn't have a private attorney who could recommend this stuff to me. You know, I was starting from scratch with nothing as a real estate investor. But by being able to go to my local RIA meetings, I got introduced to Dyke Spottiford, who used to teach a lot of courses on land trusts and other types of trusts as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's like walk listeners through, now that we've got them all terrified.
Well, we gave them a great reason to use a trust.
It brings
it home, literally.
That's exactly. Let's walk them through how this would work. So I have my house and my name and my spouse's name is on the deed. And now I'm going, oh my God, I've got to quote, put it in a land trust. What do I do?
First of all, you find the documents that you want to use. If you don't have access to land trust documents, you could contact your local attorney or your local real estate association who could recommend somebody to get the documents from. The land trust documents themselves are not that expensive in the scheme of things and protecting your privacy and possibly protecting your wife and kids at home. So in the scheme of that, they're very inexpensive. So the first step is to get the documents.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second step would be you've got a couple decisions to make. Who is going to be your trustee of your trust and who is going to be the beneficiary? As we mentioned before, you can serve as either the trustee or the beneficiary, but if serving as a trustee doesn't give you privacy because your name's going to appear as the trustee on all the legal documents.
Okay.
So that doesn't give you much privacy, even though legally you can be the trustee.
Yep.
So typically you want to pick a trustee with at least a different last name than yours.
Well, give me an example of who, if I'm looking around in my sphere of influence, what kind of characteristics would I be looking for in my trustee other than we didn't share a last name?
Yeah, who makes a great trustee might be somebody who you're already seeing on a weekly or biweekly basis. You're already interacting with frequently so that you can talk about things. You don't have to have special meetings or get together. A financial friend, maybe. I know a lot of my colleagues use other people within our RIA groups. We've known each other I've been in one RIA I've been running for 33 years. So, you know, I've had a long history with a lot of these people. And just last week, one of my best friends became the trustee of another best friend's trust, you know, and so it works if they have some financial experience. But it also can be, I know a lot of people have used, like my wife's sister would make a good trustee. My wife's parents could make a good trustee. They obviously have a different last name from me. It could be my brother-in-law who's my trustee, or it could be my sister who's remarried and, you know, now goes by a married last name. So it could be family members that have different last name as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they have to be someone who's accessible to you.
Yeah, they will need to participate. They will need to sign some documents once in a while. If it's just your personal house, they won't have much to sign or much to do. But if you start buying properties, they will need to sign the deeds to put the property into the trust, and then they will need to execute, pay some bills and stuff like that on behalf of the trust, possibly. Mm-hmm. So. It
mm-hmm.
helps it if they are somewhat accessible.
Mm-hmm. And I can't state strongly enough that there's a reason they're called trustees. Because as we discussed earlier, but I'm going to say it again just for the people in the back, the trustee actually owns the property. It's not that there's the trust owns the property. This human being owns the property as in their role as trustee. So if I were going to make, if I'm going to Mike here, my trustee, cause I do see him every week and I have known him for years. He would own it. What the deed would say, if anybody looked it up, is Mike Martini, comma, trustee. And then possibly some people like to name their trust. Like it might say, of the 123 Easy Street Trust, something like that. But Mike can, if he's a bad guy, do all sorts of things that I don't want him to do with that property, like sell it.
That's true. The trustee literally could go and sell it behind your back if they chose to. So that's why it's, you know, that's why I like it. Somebody who you see on a regular basis, you get a feel, you keep that relationship going. Somebody you've known for many years. Sometimes it's people's best friend from college. Sometimes it's the buddy they go bowling with every Friday night or go to football games with or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They have a relationship that of total trust. It's the type of people who would show up for you. If you were incapacitated in a hospital for a few weeks, maybe you had to have a minor surgery, but you're on some medication that incapacitates you, they're the type of people who'd show up and help you out and help you take care of your family. Those type of people make great trustees.
Okay. So we get the paperwork. We figure out who we trust enough to be our trustee. And then what you said, we also have to make a decision about who's going to be the beneficiary. Who
right.
should that be?
It can be somebody personal. It can be an individual. It can be yourself. I know a lot of people who name themselves as a beneficiary. That way they have more control over the trust because the beneficiary can tell the trustee what they want it to do, and the trustee should execute on their wishes. So it does give you more control if you yourself are the trustee. But as we mentioned a while ago, if you want more asset protection, then making an LLC, that maybe it's a single member LLC that you're the single member of, that gives you more liability protection.
Okay. Now, if in the scenario where it's my personal house, I probably don't want to make the LLC a trustee or the beneficiary, because I have certain tax benefits that come with owning a personal house that is being, you know, hopefully going up in value over time, that I will actually lose by transferring it to my LLC. The only time I'm going to transfer my personal house to a trust with a LLC as the beneficial holder is if I have decided to turn that house into an investment property.
That's exactly right. I would agree with that 100%.
Okay.
That homestead exemption by you owning it personally or by you owning it a personal trust is oftentimes in a lot of jurisdictions worth a big tax deduction.
All right. So we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to some of the questions that have come in at vinoradio@gmail.com. You can also call in your questions at 877-772-9658. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Talking today about land trusts and joking in between segments about the circumstances under which Mike could be my trustee, sell my house, get the money, and then immediately run away to a country with no extradition treaty with the United States. You hear those stories, ladies and gentlemen, but they are very rare, because indeed the trustee has a fiduciary duty to do what the trust agreement says. And when they do not do that, it is criminal. So, yeah, I wouldn't, as long as you got somebody you trust or who's slightly afraid of you, you probably will not have such problems. Okay, so now we've got, Todd, we've got the document, what you call the trust document, which is really, I mean, when anybody who ever sits down and reads a trust document realizes pretty quickly that it's like a 7 to 15 page long contract between the trustee and the beneficiary, saying what powers the trustee has without the beneficiary giving him instructions, and which is not much, and what he can do with the beneficiary's permission. But just because we have the documents, we have the trustee, we have the beneficiary, it is not yet, quote, in the trust? How do we actually get my name off the deed and the trustee's name onto it?
Right, and that's the final step. Once you have the document signed and notarized, now you have a trust established, but it's not a valid trust until it has a property in it or some asset in it. So that's the last step, is you simply deed the property. If Vina owns the property in her own name, she simply signs a warranty deed to deed that property with its correct legal description into this ABC or this 12 Main Street Trust, whatever it's called, and with Mike as the trustee. And now, as soon as it gets recorded at the courthouse, now the trust is official and it has a property in it and it's up and running.
Okay. So the trust, that big old trust contract, that big old trust agreement, what happens to that?
That stays in your private file. We don't ever record those. What we do record is a document that's typically one page long that's called an affidavit of trust that puts down the 123 Main Street Trust with Mike as the trustee, is the owner of 123 Main Street with its correct legal description, and that one-page document that gives the address that you can reach the trustee at, that is the one-page document that we typically record. Now, that's a state-specific requirement. Some states may require you record the entire document. But in Georgia, where I am, we can simply record an affidavit of trust, which is one page.
Okay. So, see, folks, pretty simple. Oh, and here's the little secret that Todd did not say. You are going to go to an attorney to get your first land trust drafted, unless you happen to, I don't know, take a course or something where there's a really good one included, and then you're probably still going to take it to your attorney to get reviewed before you
absolutely
use it. But then once...
If you got the document anywhere from an attorney, you should always have it reviewed by your attorney. I did that. I got mine from somebody teaching a course. It was a fairly expensive weekend course, a two-day course. And then we took it to our local attorney, and he read through it and got back to me about a week later and said, yep, this is fine. We can use this. We've been using that same document now since about 1991 or 1992. So
and
quite a while.
Literally the same document. Like unless
yes,
you
literally unless, the same document.
Unless you
yes.
do something crazy like you have some completely different terms in the next trust you do. It's plug and play. It's like a purchase agreement. You don't go have your attorney draft a new purchase agreement every time you want to write a contract on a house. You just fill in the blanks in a different way, right?
Right. And every attorney's got boilerplates for these anyhow. They don't have to create. They're used so commonly and so often. A purchase and sale agreement, a trust agreement, they use them all the time. So they can charge you a minimal amount to generate it for you in your situation because they don't have to go create it from scratch. They've already got a document there. They might just tweak it a little bit or go ahead and put your entity name into it for you. But they're very simple to create. And one thing I did mention is they're so simple to create that you can have one separate land trust for every single property you own. We have had dozens and dozens of land trusts in existence at once.
Mm-hmm. And is that what you recommend, just different land trusts for each property?
I personally prefer to separate every single property out into its own trust. That way, if something bad happened at one property, if there was a fire there, or if there was, they could not encumber the other properties, even that are, we often have, five and six and seven houses side by side on one street. They couldn't encumber the other houses because they were in their own trust.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't tie us up from carrying on the business of the house next door just because their house caught on fire or something, they tripped and fell down the steps or something like that, mm-hmm. and they want to blame us for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, at some point in that litigation that might, happen after somebody hurts themselves on the property, there will be a discovery process and the trustee will be called into court and they will say the beneficiary is such and such an LLC. And then the other attorney will say, we need to find out what else this LLC owns. And so this isn't like bulletproof, like no one's ever going to find my other property sort of thing. But I think what people have found it very handy for is when it's not a real claim, when it is what we call a nuisance suit.
That's right. Absolutely. And we have had those. We have had those where we've gotten a call from an attorney on a Monday morning saying that, this house at 123 Main Street that you manage, the tenant friend came over and the the friend of the tenant fell down the steps and they got hurt and had to go by ambulance to the hospital, and they don't have any insurance, and so they want you to pay their medical bills. Well, first of all, we didn't cause them to trip and fall. Second of all, they're not even a tenant at the property. And once they find out it's in a trust, and we explain that to the attorney, and he typically knows that because he's looked up the address of the property and seen it's in a trust. He just wants to get to the trustee so he can try to influence the trustee on the phone to pay some money and mm-hmm. agree to pay some money. Mm-hmm. And the trust puts a separation between that, and the trust usually stops those nuisance suits where they really don't have a claim because it makes it too expensive for the attorney to file the documents. They're going to need the tenant to give them some money to start the process, and most tenants won't pay the money to start the process when they know the payback is,
yeah,
you know, who knows if they'll ever get a dime out of it.
And in legitimate claims, again, there's insurance to cover those sorts
exactly.
of things. It's the, I mean, I've seen so many claims over the years, not luckily mostly not against me. But my father was a big believer in being his own trustee. And so if you looked in the public record and found one of his addresses, you found all 128 of them because they were all in the name of the same trustee. And there was a case where the most egregious one that I can remember is there was a case where a motorcyclist swerved to avoid hitting a dog that turned out to be one of his tenant's dogs who had escaped from the house and run into the street, and the motorcyclist dumped his bike and, you know, had an actual injury. And the attorney immediately called and demanded a settlement, and my father said, "I don't think you're going to win this case. I think this is too many steps removed from me. You know, I'm not responsible for controlling the tenant's dogs. I'm not responsible for how fast the motorcyclist is going on a city street. I'm not responsible." And what the very smart attorney did was he put a lis pendens against every other house my dad owned while the suit was in progress. And that was more just to force a settlement, because he knew the insurance company wasn't going to pay. So it was like to force a settlement, because my dad couldn't sell anything. He couldn't refinance anything. I mean, it was a bad 6 months until my dad actually got into court and the judge said, "No, there's no case here." And then the guy had to release all the lis pendenses. So that kind of...
Yes, and that's an actual good real example. And I give that an example like that all the time, although I've never had that happen. That's why I had every property in a separate trust, so that if that happened, they couldn't go file lis pendens against every property, because I might be in the process of trying to sell a property. All of a sudden, I can't close because the title's not clear.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Now, like I say, not just so everybody knows, these types of situations don't happen that often in landlording. I've been in landlording for almost 40 years now, and full-time in real estate 40, and so far, knock on wood, we've had a couple of tenants get hurt. It was their own fault. You know, they were up on a ladder trying to do something and they fell off, and it was our fault they got hurt because they decided to get up on a ladder type of thing. And you hate that people get hurt, but it's most cases where people get hurt, it's not the landlord's fault if you take care of your property, which we always did. We wanted nice houses, well-maintained, and no issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, we are going to have to start hitting the Q&A box here, because I have more questions for you than I have had in for a guest in I don't know how long. Here's a quick one. Reginald is asking, and he's probably not listening, so I'll just answer this for everybody else. He's asking, is there any way to listen to the show afterwards? The answer is yes. You can get it on Spotify, or you can download it directly from realliferealestate.com. They're usually up by the end of the week. Don't expect it to be up at 6:01 today. Question from Rob. I use land trusts regularly for fix and flips, but I've wondered about the implication of using them to transfer free and clear properties from an existing personal residence currently in an individual's name, or an existing rental property owned by an LLC. So what he's asking is, so there's already this property in my name or my LLC's name, and this is about transferring it. We've already described the process, but his question is, what if any impact would there be with the county on homestead and or owner occupied credits if it were not a rental?
Typically, there is no, as long as you title the property correctly, like we mentioned before, as long as a person the true beneficiary is listed on there. It won't affect homestead exemption. Sometimes you might have to go in and actually show them the document to prove to them that you're still the beneficiary. If you're the beneficiary, you are the owner, that hasn't changed if that's the case. But when a property is paid off, I think he mentioned that in the question, that's when it's even more imperative to get some asset protection or some privacy involved, because if there's 100% loan against the house and somebody sued you, what are they going to get? There's nothing to get. The house has no value above what is owed on the mortgage. But if it's free and clear and it's worth $300,000, $500,000, they could get that entire thing. So mm-hmm. it's even more imperative the more, and that's one another reason why we use more than one trust, because the more equity there is to protect, the more imperative it is to have more of these tactics in place that help preserve your equity.
Mm-hmm. And his second question is, would making this move trigger any transfer or conveyance tax on the title if the beneficial interest, if the beneficiary is the same as the present owner?
Typically, there's no, I'm not a tax attorney, I'm not a CPA, but my experience is we have transferred titles hundreds of times in the past. We literally in 1 year pulled out 39 houses out of their 39 separate trusts, refinanced them, and then a week later put them back into the trust. There was no tax effect whatsoever because we didn't actually get any money. There was no money changing hands. Mm-hmm. You're just transferring the title into a privacy asset protection, whatever reason you're using for a land trust. You're just changing the title of the property. You're yes. not getting the proceeds.
And Rob, I know you're in Ohio, and I can only speak to the counties that I work in, which are here in the south and you're in the center, but we fill out an exempt transfer form when we do that. We just check a box that says this is an exempt transfer because basically it's a me-to-me transfer, and they don't charge the conveyance tax. So we need to take a quick break. We're going to try and get to answers to all of your questions when we come back. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing, talking today about what has apparently become a super popular topic, which is title holding trusts, a.k.a. land trusts. Those of you who signed up to come to the Creative Finance Summit on May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th here in Cincinnati at our fund drive about a month and a half ago, you're gonna have Todd all weekend. He will be there all weekend. He's actually giving an hour-long talk uninterrupted by Vina on how these things work, so y'all will be able to get your fill of land trusts. For those of you who are not coming to the Creative Finance Summit, Todd is also giving a Saturday online seminar about understanding land trusts, where he's going to go kind of from the real basic, which is what we're talking about today, up through some of the really good uses of land trusts, like in creative finance transactions as a way to transfer ownership. You bring on a partner, you can transfer the ownership to the partner through the beneficial interest instead of having to go through all the effort of deed preparation and transferring and all that sort of stuff. It's going to get super advanced. That is on May 10th. You can learn more about that and sign up for it at CincinnatiRIA.com. Let's go to line one and talk to Russell. Russell, welcome to Real Life Real Estate.
Hi, how's it going? Thank you for this. I had a question regarding heard some attorneys talk about a charging order. I know you're talking stuff about the making it a trust serving as making a suit not worth it. What are some of the differences?
Well, no. So a charging order, Russell, applies to is when you heard an attorney talking about that, they were talking about LLCs. And it happens to be the case that if somebody gets a judgment against your LLC, what they do is they get a charging order against the LLC that basically says if anything comes out, if a property sold, if money is distributed, any of that sort of stuff, then the person who won the judgment gets that money, which mm-hmm. creates some very interesting situations like what happened to OJ when Nicole Simpson's family got a whatever million-dollar civil judgment against him and then didn't collect because he got it against the LLC and
got it.
Then OJ never released anything from his LLC. I assume they've gotten paid now, but for years and years and years, it was this big travesty that because of the way he had set himself up, they were not able to actually collect the huge judgment that they got. Now, Todd, in regards to a land trust, anything different?
Well, like you said, there's no charging orders involving land trusts, but certainly if somebody won a case, if you know, we were deemed guilty because we didn't fix a stairway that the tenant had reported there was something wrong with it, the steps were loose, and then they tripped and fell. And so, first of all, there would be the insurance, like you mentioned before, that would be liable to pay. But if the suit exceeds the amount of the insurance, then they could certainly go after the trust and try to get the house or whatever assets are in that trust if the trust has any money.
Mm-hmm. Of course, if the underlying beneficiary is an LLC, they're back to the whole charging order.
Right, then they can bring it in if they do that.
Okay. All right, Russell, appreciate your question.
Thanks so much. I missed the ninth, by the way, so I was looking for it on Real Life Real Estate. So, I missed that one. Okay. Maybe that'll come in soon.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Todd, question from Tina, who's in Orlando. She says, in Florida, investors often use land trusts to hold title to a property. I heard that this type of land trust is not recognized in many states. I may be wrong here. Is the trust you describe the same as the land trust we use in Florida?
She is correct. There are many states, in fact, probably most states, do not actually have statutory law that addresses land trusts. So land trust began, I believe Illinois was the first state to introduce the statutory law that addressed land trust, but every single state in the country, if you ask any lawyer in any state, land trust transactions are used in every state in the country. They just don't have the statutory law that explains them, but all the courts are familiar with them. All the courts have dealt with them. We don't have statutory law on them in Georgia either, but I've been using them for over 35 years and have been to court with them quite a few times, and it's never an issue. Nobody ever brings it up. The judge doesn't mention it. It's a contract, and contract law is in effect in every state in the country. Mm-hmm. So they just look at the contract law and look what the contract says and don't disregard at the top that says it's a land trust. It's a contract. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. And I hear that all the time. Well, we don't have land trusts in Tennessee. I'm like, no, you do. Well, no, a lawyer told me you didn't. That's because your lawyer didn't know anything about land trusts, and he looked in the state statutes and he didn't find anything about them. And so he said, quote, we don't have them, because he didn't understand that they are just contracts. Question
right.
From Rick. He says, if I'm concerned about the safety and or privacy, why would I put a friend or family member in the line of fire?
In my point of view, you're not putting them in the line of fire. It's just you're getting yourself more privacy, and the insurance is going to, you know, most of the time, 90% of the time we've ever had any issues with the, you know, multitude of properties that we've owned over the last 40 years, you know, the insurance company handles the claim. The insurance company has their own attorneys. They deal with it, and typically, you know, and we have never had a case, luckily, where anybody has had anything that exceeded the limits of the insurance policy. So the insurance company, 9 times out of 10, is maybe even 99 times out of 100, you know, close to 100 out of 100. The insurance company is going to handle it if somebody does get hurt or if there is a claim, and it will be covered by the insurance. They will decide how to proceed, and it will be resolved. And nobody, you or your family, are not put in harm's way.
And a big chunk of that trust agreement is you or your LLC indemnifying the trustee against any personal liability for anything. No one would ever be your trustee if there was a chance that there could be $1 million judgment and somehow they would have to pay it.
Right. And as part of that, it says that if there is a suit, your trust will pay to defend them,
mm-hmm.
even though you've got the indemnification. It will pay to get them released. It will pay to get them absolved from responsibility.
Yes, and I've
so
had
no real risk to the trustee.
I've had a couple of run-ins over the years, generally with the code enforcement department and their gigantic fines here in Cincinnati, where they sent the fine not to the trustee as trustee, but to the trustee personally. And it was pretty easy to walk downtown with the trust agreement and say, it is not his fine.
Right.
It is our fine. Stop threatening my trustee. Let's see. I think we might have time for one more quick question. Joel wants to know, can your attorney be your trustee?
Absolutely. I know quite a few attorneys who do serve as trustees. And that does give you another level of protection, because the attorney can say, I have attorney-client privilege. I can't discuss everything. you can subpoena me in court to reveal some stuff, and then we'll see if it gets revealed or not. But it does give you another level of protection. It does cost more because you're going to have to pay that attorney to be your trustee. So it depends on your situation. How much of an asset, how much of a net worth, how much of a an equity do you have in the property that you're trying to protect, or properties. If that, I've got a great friend of mine who has, he's got like 37 different trusts that one trustee is the trustee on every single one of those.
Todd, unfortunately, we are out of time, and I am actually leaving questions in the inbox because there are just so many of them. So, again, folks, if you're coming to the Creative Finance Summit May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, you can talk to Todd there. Otherwise, he's doing an pretty much all day, 9 to 3, online workshop about trusts, not just the basics, but all of the more advanced stuff that you can do with them. You can go to CincinnatiRIA.com and find out more about that. While you're at it, sign up for tonight's free Summit Investor Help Night. It's on Zoom. Everybody can come, and it's about how to, helping you structure your deals. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.